Let's just kick it off. When the genesis of the guitar playing, I was 9 years old and I was like on a swing set, and you know the top pole that holds the actual swing. I decided to go and try and tightrope walk that bar, and I slipped. And when I slipped, I'm not going to be too descriptive about this because some people cringe, but let me just say I fell the wrong way. Ouch. And I shattered my elbow into more than 30 pieces. So it was a really, really dynamic break for like a kid. And I had to go through all of these different medical appointments and see so many different specialists because essentially I'd broken my ulna. And that meant that the arm wasn't going to grow anymore if it didn't heal correctly. Finally ended up finding the right specialist, the right doctors. We got put on this like crazy plan. I had to do physical therapy with the elbow shattered and what have you. But one of the things they knew is that I was going to lose rotation in my arm. And still to this day, I've got about 60%, but you can kind of see how like this arm, it just doesn't, I have to rotate this way to get it. And one of the doctors said one of the best things that I could do is learn how to play guitar. Because when you're on the neck of a guitar, you're consistently like straining and pulling this way so that it was going to create more mobility. And so that's how I learned how to play guitar. I started playing guitar as almost like a prescription to create more mobility after a really bad elbow injury.
What's next for IT? In today's economy, technology touches every aspect of the day-to-day operations of business. There has never been more pressure on IT to deliver for our organizations. So what can we expect over the next decade? We need to think differently about how we approach our work to continue to thrive into the future. This requires all of us to be intentional in how we look at our role going forward. Smart IT is an approach to getting the important things done by transforming the way we think, work, and lead. And now, let's disrupt the status quo, simplify the complex, and reduce risk the smart IT way. So this is the first time I've ever heard of physical therapy prescribing an instrument plan. Wow. Yeah.
An instrument plan, exactly.
And this is a 9 years old, man, that's an early age.
Yeah, very, very early age. And I kind of like dabbled at that age, but I really started playing in middle school. Like the bug got me in middle school. I would just sit down all day in my room and learn all these different guitar licks that came from the greats that I loved.
Well, now hold it now. If any parents watch this, they can get some weird ideas like, hey, we can get our kids to do X, Y, and Z. We tell them there's some physical benefits to doing that. Like when you wash clothes or wash dishes. Wash dishes allow you to have more flexibility.
You know, let me tell you though, when that's applied to music, man, I think music is one of the most incredible art forms of them all. I mean, it's in and of itself an indescribable language. And I think what it activates in your perception, in your even critical thinking, in ways in which you're trying to just figure out how do I use this specific technique in this instrument that has these finite capabilities to create something that I can't quite hear yet, but I'm trying to get to. I really, it's me and my business partner here at Copycat. A lot of our time in strategizing for the business has been spent playing music. He's an incredible pianist. I actually have one of his vinyls pressed here at the place. And so music has been a big part of our journey as entrepreneurs. And we're not like musicians even, you know, no, we don't play in a band, but it's the properties of sitting down and jamming seem to translate really well when we're trying to think through some big problems.
So you're trying to say, Sean, when you're in a jam, when you got that business problem that's vexing you, you can't figure out another way out of it, you need to go down to the garage, bring out the guitar, your business partner, get on the piano.
Yep. Getting the keys.
Take a little
hour jam break, you know? Yeah.
The next, exactly. You know, you built the next big thing. I like that.
Yeah. You know,
well, that's interesting. I know a lot of emerging technologies the last couple of years have caused a lot of businesses to have to, you know, adjust on the fly.
Yeah.
I know you guys experienced that yourself. So I'm always interested to see how do you take something new, like something new and exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, at first, at a glance, it's like, I like that new technology. It's going to be awesome, right? No paper. We're not going to have to ride on the roads. They're going to be flying in the air. All these cool imaginative things. So you see new things get introduced with emerging technology. You're excited. Yeah. But then you might have to observe your business and how it's doing and market changes. And sometimes you realize, whoa, this is affecting our business here. Okay, yeah. Let's see what's going on. So let's talk about that and what Copycat went through and what you guys see. Yeah.
Absolutely. And number one, I'm just so excited to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And thank you for creating the space. Yeah, we've had a really, really interesting relationship with AI. So I'm, the founder of Copycat, which I started in 2017 is nothing more, say for like a little supplemental income engine, writing copy on the side. Ended up scaling this really robust and comprehensive copywriting agency that bigger agencies could use to omit any need to go and acquire talent in writing based on the strategies and the channels that they're performing in. That they could use to scale their own content efforts. And through this, we grew to a team of about 15 internally and over 60 writers that we called upon on a basis. We are producing every type of content imaginable, from creative scripting and like true to our roots, because a lot of us are screenwriting or playwright backgrounds, all the way to, just the boilerplate marketing collateral, like blogs and newsletters. Mm-hmm. Ending pages and email copy and beyond. We were kind of at the height of our team growth and our revenue growth when ChatGPT was first announced. And it really had a massive impact on the business model. At the time, figuring out and cracking the code of how to produce quality content at scale was very difficult for businesses. And that's one of the reasons why Copycat had its trajectory, why Copycat was able to do what it did. But what ChatGPT represented, even if it wasn't tested yet, even if the functionality wasn't understood, is it represented this very accessible technology that you could task an internal team with to go and solve these content problems, to go and even produce content. I mean, it created a whole new standard of what just the baseline quality of any type of content we use for marketing is. And so in an interesting way, I'm not trying to like glorify this moment, but Copycat and this type of business model was one of like the first that was very threatened by the advent of AI, because I would reckon that AI's first massive widespread use case is human communication. I mean, who benefited the most from that first rollout of ChatGPT? Bad communicators, right? Yeah. That maybe struggled to put together marketing collateral or struggled to write a great email sequence. I mean, quickly after that, it became code and what have you.
And that's interesting because a lot of technology, it comes out, but you require expertise on the outside to help you with it. This is like, just open it up like you go into your browser, log in, zero calls. Give me your content and I'm going to give you something back in a few seconds. It's like, what? Yeah. That sounds insane. You'll give me value for free? Something's wrong here, which we can get into later, but that free has hidden cost on the back end of why it's actually free, unless you yourself are the product.
William, that's exactly it. And that's why I can't fault like the challenges that we went through during that moment, because you had companies paying $4,000 a month to get a few blogs up on their website and build some content that they needed for whatever marketing strategy they had in place. And ChatGPT represented a way to do that literally for free. And so, of course, one of the first interesting data points here, one of the things that actually happened in this season is companies really started reading their own content to see like how it fared against, what ChatGPT could produce as a baseline. Like, let's actually go look at our blogs that we've been publishing, for the last couple of years and kind of see what quality sits for us. But no, you're exactly right. It changed the value system. And that was the hardest thing for us, right? It wasn't like individuals, companies, senior leadership teams, they weren't going out and saying ChatGPT is the end all be all. Let's integrate it everywhere. Let's only produce AI content. But they were certainly looking at what it takes to produce content, and that changed, the perception changed. Yeah. And thus the business model that we were running with at the time just wasn't as viable.
Yeah. And and when that challenge comes, it normally comes over a longer period of time.
Yes. So this is,
yeah.
Yes. I'll give you another data point on this. That is just the scale and the scale and the speed is always so fascinating to me. Yeah. We lost about half of our runway in, I'd say, 3 months.
Oh, wow.
With just the announcement from November to January. We knew it was going to be a very, very big problem for us to solve for.
Yeah, because normally you have what? You can go on an annual strategic mm-hmm. review. You see what happened yep. last year. You see yep. the new tech, what's going to happen. Maybe in a year or two, you have time to adjust. Yep. But not normally. It's like, okay, in a couple of months, your prospects who say, hey, we love Sean, we love Copycat, we love what you guys are doing. We're paying you for value, you exchange your value, they're happy. And all of a sudden, to turn around and find out, it's not even a specific competitor. It wasn't like Copycat 2. No. It's a generic big tech yeah. saying, hey, guys, log in for free.
Yeah. And how do you fight against that? Like, how do you fight against a change in the zeitgeist? You have to figure out how to adjust with it and move with it and ultimately define like what your position is. The onus then becomes on you when it comes to an acceleration of technology like this to really, number one, identify where there are places that this technology can make you more effective and can amplify what you're already so good at, but then also identify kind of your own moral compass on what is this going to mean to the business? What is this going to mean in terms of the way that we staff and build out our workforce? And one of the things that I knew very early on is we would never use AI for generative content. It was just not going to be part of our mission because our whole mission was about bringing celebrated, incredible creatives into this space and monetizing this beautiful skill set that they have to make the internet more readable. That was our first slogan at Copycat. And I think that, you know, once you start really looking forward and saying, okay, so if the value set has changed, if this one piece of technology is going to redefine the way that we think about an art form or a specific type of work, then what are the ripples that technology is going to create in other areas? At least that's my model. That's what I use to like kind of figure out what the next pivot was going to be for Copycat, or even if there was going to be a pivot. I basically asked, okay, well, if everyone now has access to the same writer and we can publish content at light speed, what does that mean for marketing? What does that mean for the different channels that everyone's operating in? And the bet that I made was that over time, what we are going to see is two things. Number one, just noise, right? Yeah. Everything was going to become noisier. Every single channel was going to have more content in it. But second to that, we are going to see a lot of what already wasn't working done at a higher volume.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was going to be one of the big, big challenges, in my opinion, because we're talking about companies that may have a marketing ecosystem or a marketing team and may have a sales team, and yet they haven't really figured out product market fit as it pertains to their narrative. They haven't really figured out that end all be all point of view that truly captures why they're the most unique company to deliver this product or solution. And so you add an AI layer on top of that, and now you get to a place where we're doing the same thing that wasn't necessarily aligned from the beginning. We're just doing a lot more of it.
Yeah. Imagine the good old spam. Man, these spam emails are getting better for things I don't need. these 20 emails that came in, the grammar was good, but the story seemed very similar. It's like, so all of a sudden everybody got the same tooling, the same output. So it's like, where's the value there? How do the customers and prospects siphon through and filter through all that noise?
That's exactly it. And so I'm like, all right, well, we're going to have this super writer that's just blasting content into the ether. Yeah. And then in addition to that, we are going to have every company in the world feeling FOMO for not integrating, you know, to some degree. And at the time, William, you know, the discipline in digital marketing for a very long time was content is king, but directly next to that was copy your competitor. What are your competitors doing? go look at that and replicate and kind of, you know, make it your own. And I had been watching this play out for like 5 years, and I always had the same exact thought. How many copies, and ironic because my company's name is Copycat, can you create in terms of a strategy until that market share is completely dried up? And I think one of the things that happened very quickly with the advent of AI in marketing is companies that typically had a strategy that they could depend on started to recognize that the efficacy wasn't the same. Either media costs were going up, or just the general performance of the campaign wasn't as pronounced as it used to be. A big place that we saw this immediately, as just going back to your point, is in cold email. You know, 5 years ago, we had a couple of cold emails that we would wake up to in our inbox. And today it's about 15 a day. And somehow I'm invited to meetings that I don't even know what they are, who sent them. And I'm on 20 newsletters I've never heard of. And it's just like, it's just pure overwhelm. And so like, it's again, going back to that kind of noisiness. And there it was for me. I was like, okay, here's the problem. Here's the new problem that's going to be created. How can I engineer a solution with the skill set that I have, the capabilities that my agency has developed over the course of the last 7 years, and how can I actually help businesses navigate this new landscape? And that's when we came upon the idea of strategic narrative. Originally, what it was is we were going back to kind of our roots as writers and saying, what would it look like if brands had access to a Hollywood writing room? Ooh, you know, interesting. Where everyone could sit down with these incredible creatives that are taking every character, every component of the plot, the theme, the audience into consideration, and just throwing out the best ideas they can to see which one's going to just rise to the top. What does that look like? Right? Because we don't really bring that type of intentionality into storytelling in business, at least in my opinion. And then we started looking at world building, you know, the exercises that we go through when we're building a world in an arena like a video game or a fantasy novel. And what became really fascinating to us is like world building, you're going through this right now in the novel that you're writing. It's a really intensive exercise because you have to build this world, create a rule set for this world that needs to be believable enough, because that rule set should dictate the stakes to your characters and the stakes to your plot. And if your stakes aren't believable, then there's nothing really to ground this novel or whatever you're building. Then after you build that world and that rule set, you have to draft memorable characters, create a story for all of them to live, and get all an incredible backstory that plays an influence in what we're seeing or experiencing in this thing that you've built. Then you need to throw them into that world and you need to combine the two. And so we started thinking, like, how can we apply this process to brands? How can we help brands really visualize the industry and the challenges around them as this world that they've been thrown into? And then how do we look at that brand and say, okay, if this is the number one thing that you're solving for, if we can extract this pain, this challenge, this problem, and actually personify it and make it kind of a villain, so to speak, what characteristics does your brand need to develop to be able to overcome that? Let's start there, because that's what people are going to freaking root for. And that's really where the idea started for our entire pivot into, you know, we went from a copywriting agency into a narrative agency.
Strategic narrative. I like it.
Yeah.
And it brings back this whole thing of this, the nature of work and the fact that you put time, hours and days and months into an effort. You have the sweat going on there.
Yeah.
And build something. So I think some people are getting caught with the sexiness of quick millisecond, second response. It's like, we're done. Like, whoa. But that still doesn't mean your product team, sales, marketing, your executives are still on the same page, right? So if you ask the CEO, what do you do? It might be different from the sales rep or the BDR. And you see this misalignment across the board. And I'm like, God, you need to fix this, right? You need to put the work in to fix this. And now you throw an AI on top of it. You got everybody doing these weird things. Sales trying to use ChatGPT to do some stuff. The marketing, like, what are you doing? Where'd you get that? Product team's trying to use it. And it's all this chaos and friction out there. And they could be throwing out so many different messages to the market, which is could be problematic.
And it's also, we've been obsessed with speed for a while, man. Speed has been the name of the game, especially when tech came on. I mean, I think it's Zuckerberg that said, go fast and break things. Maybe that's his quote. I hope I'm not misquoting him. Yeah. Forgive me to whoever actually said that if I'm incorrect. But you know, this whole idea of like speed, everything should be shipped as quickly as possible so that we can break it and then learn from it and then integrate. You know, ChatGPT gave everyone that acceleration like right in their pockets in many ways. And I'm talking a little bit about perception right now because, you know, the functionality of ChatGPT, you can't just go and task it to do your job today. There's so many different prohibitors to that. But the reality is for me, when you start seeing a lot of businesses and people moving at light speed, it's actually a signal for me to do the opposite. Right? It's like, if we're all going to start marching as quickly as possible towards this end state, I think that that's a perfect opportunity to actually click pause and say, what can we do better as a team? How can we improve this entire story architecture that we're leading with that has all these different deployments from SDRs that are representing us to our clients, to the way our founders and executives are speaking at conferences, to what's captured in, you know, the brand itself on the website or whatever asset someone uses to explain it, so that when you set up the systems for speed, everything's aligned from the outset and it becomes that much more impactful.
And the other thing is, I'm expecting that in the future, in the near future, going to be a premium on slow. Yeah. You may, because your customer may
start to,
yeah. So you know what? It's going to take about 8 minutes for your food to be prepared. And while you're waiting for your food to be prepared, you can have a nice conversation versus, hey, we're going to have, you drive around the corner, it's going to be done in 2.5 minutes. Yeah. Well, in certain situations, 2.5 minutes is good, but maybe the customer, maybe not all the time, but certain times we want it slower to slow down. Maybe we want more of a conversation. We don't mind getting in the car, driving to a conference center or driving to your office, spending those hours to get in the whiteboard and do that. And people may value that and say, you know what? Sometimes I went quick, but sometimes I went slower. And we appreciate that. Yeah.
I adore this conversation. Yeah. You just said a premium on slow. Yeah. I actually think in some ways there's this interesting phenomenon happening right now where like slow is actually what fast is creating. Let me explain this.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, let's talk about like a fractional CFO firm. Okay. Yeah. 3 or 4 years ago, they could have put a 500 word blog up on the best 5 things to include in your financial checklist, or how to switch from accrual to cash basis accounting, or the inverse. And they could drive traffic to that blog. They could answer someone's question and maybe do it in an elegant enough way that that person then became an inbound lead and reached out and was like, hey, can you go do this for me? To produce that 500 word blog didn't take that much. Someone just needed to be able to be articulate enough to write about it. And someone needed enough knowledge to review it and edit it to make sure that it, you know, represented the brand. But with how everything has changed today, that's completely flipped on its head. That 500 word blog now needs to be the most stunning piece of thought leadership that an executive has to post from their personal account. And that piece needs to be so differentiated that no one would see it and associate it with all the other content that's coming from that industry. And that piece in and of itself needs to offer something worth $500 for free.
That's huge.
Do you see what I'm kind of saying about like the acceleration and the noise has actually created? Now, I would reckon that piece that I'm talking about takes someone 3 days now to build, as opposed to the 3 or 4 hours that went into that blog collateral previously. So there's a component of this. You just said a premium on slow. I also think there's another thing that's happening here where like we have to move slower in some areas and some channels. Now, when we're looking at paid ads and data analytics, like I think AI is doing incredible work there. I mean, it's just the attribution is better. I know a lot of data intelligence companies that are moving into ad tech specifically for this reason. And it's phenomenal. So it has, it's not so, you know, black and white that in some areas or all areas, there's this kind of like need to start moving slower. It's all dependent, but I am saying it.
Yeah. And the other premium is going to be on to talk to a person. Cause right now they're doing a lot of effort, you know, cost cutting, using these automated tools to route you through a phone system, route you through an email sequencing. It's like, or walk into a building as you don't see anybody around, like, okay, go to the digital board, digital elevators, all these components that took the human element away. People are going to say, you know what? Can I see somebody when I walk in your door? Can I be greeted? Can I see people? Can I shake hands? Well, we don't do that anymore. And somebody else is going to say, you know what? We're going to start doing that again. Yeah. And we're going to charge a premium for that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get a lot of people saying, I like that. I'm willing to pay for it. I want to interface because it feels different.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the novelty will wear off quickly. And then, you know, this idea of bots buying from bots, which is a really popular thing to talk about right now. It's like, you know,
same.
right content like for other, you know, AI agents, because eventually like that's just how it's going to work. There's just got to be some layer of fatigue in that where no matter which way that shapes up, people are just going to miss communicating and collaborating the way that we do now. Hopefully what that looks like is an elevation of those types of collaboration. You just set a premium on slow. There might also be a premium on phenomenal creators and phenomenal writers and phenomenal strategists. I mean, I'm just speaking about my world specifically. Yeah. But yeah, I'm just completely echoing back what you're communicating.
Yeah, I wonder if we can almost think of ChatGPT like the microwave, right? You can microwave a lot of your food, but there's something about having the entire family around the kitchen table and spend 2 hours cooking together.
Yeah.
I said, oh, that's interesting. So the process, so I can get food in two different ways, but the other one creates an experience which is advantageous for us as humans. So I think you're onto something here about that slowing down and getting that premium for putting more time into it. You're going to attract a certain type of customer.
In our case, it's even like, to be honest, more interesting. Like if I even take myself and put myself under a microscope here and say, what have I done in terms of my orientation and perception of AI from when it first launched and threatened the agency to where I'm at now, you know, 2 years plus later down the road. And for us in slowing down, we developed strategic narrative. First, it was called something else. And then we started delivering it, became this product that basically we go out in person.
Come back. Oh, in person. I love it.
In person to a company's offices at an on-site. We spend 4 days running through these very intensive narrative workshops. And what the result of that effort is a narrative that is just a lot more aligned with who their customer is and with the unique qualifications that they have to go and, you know, deliver this product or service with a lot of different positioning bits in it. Then we turn that into positioning and we can integrate it wherever it's most beneficial for the business. So if it's founder-led sales, maybe it's in their sales scripts and it goes out into their LinkedIn. If it's a company that's producing a lot of marketing, maybe it's on Meta. That's really the key, is like being able to engineer a much more effective story based on the growth strategy of the business, but then being able to integrate it where it's most important. That's the problem that we've been solving for. But in slowing down, the most interesting thing for us is that we then started to recognize where AI could be a huge opportunity for Copycat. And the entire thesis of kind of what we're doing boils down to this idea that incredible storytelling can be taught. Everyone thinks that being a wonderful, you know, storyteller is this innate skill. And in many ways, that is true. There are people that are naturally gifted at holding a story. We know them amongst our friend groups. We know them in our peer circles. We know them in the amongst our colleagues. It's just someone that can start a story and you're engaged for whatever reason, based on the delivery, based on the pacing, how they build it. But the reality, William, is that stories are formulaic. They have highs and lows. They have stakes. They have mystery. They have something that keeps us engaged from point A to point Z. And when you start really looking at that formula, one of the things that you realize is, okay, this is a formula, then it can be a framework. And if it can be a framework, then this can be adopted by all different types of individuals that are trying to improve their stories based on whatever they need that story to do, be it fundraise, be it, you know, go out and write content on LinkedIn and become a thought leader, as everyone likes to call it these days, or integrate into their brand narratives so that their brand is truly differentiated amongst their competitors. And one of the things that really came to light in this season is kind of the new demands that a post AI landscape in just 2025 has put on founders. You know, 10 years ago, a founder went out and built an incredible product or solution, either bootstrapped or went the fundraising route, had to take that product to market, get it in front of customers, optimize so that it was the best version of itself, build a right team, the right team to actually go and help this company realize its potential. And then they had to do arguably the hardest part, which is learn how to become a CEO in the process. Yeah. Now they have to do all of that and become the most incredible storytellers in the world. They have to post content and thought leadership on the appropriate platform, namely LinkedIn, on a weekly basis. They then have to go and use those learnings, lead their own go-to-market, and bring those to the brand, because people don't want to buy from organizations anymore. They want to buy from people, which in and of itself is a full-time job. And it's like this whole group of builders that just had these revolutionary, incredible ideas now have to become performers. And that's it's a pretty strong gravity when it comes to like the entire process of trying to navigate entrepreneurship. And so we basically looked at Copycat's strategic narrative, the frameworks that we use to apply this specific narrative process within brands. And we basically said, can we bring this framework and our 7 years of IP into an AI native platform that is a very accessible framework that allows a founder to improve their POV, to improve their pitch, to improve whatever story is going to be the most effective for them based on their growth stage within a week's time with very little involvement from us? And the answer to that question is an overwhelming yes. And that's where we are today. We're still running the entire narrative agency, and we have a bunch of really healthy partnerships and incredible clients, but we are building the storytelling engine, which is going to be a product that founders can purchase to hopefully alleviate some of the pressure of having to become these incredible storytellers and have a POV that is so differentiated, it's unignorable.
That's a pretty powerful adaptation there. So you took the very thing that disrupted your business model, this emerging tech called AI, and you found ways to actually leverage it inside your own organization to make that pivot, provide a different value proposition, still using that innate ability to still tell those stories with these great talented writers and make it work for you.
And it's still, I want to be super clear that I'm like communicating this, no generative content. We're not using AI to generate content. We're not using it to write anything. We're not using it with any of our clients currently. We're building our platform based on the frameworks and the IP that allows strategic narrative to be such an incredible product or such a useful product, useful tool, so to speak. And yeah, you know, we started looking at integrating AI and Copycat. The question was, how do we leverage this tool to allow us to make more decisions and to have more space to think? That's it. Because when I say make more decisions, the reality is I think of making decisions in regards to strategy as the echelon above execution, right? Yeah. So the more that we can be in that pocket of strategy, the more that we can be in that pocket of like true narrative, which, as you know, as a writer, takes an unbelievable amount of focus and space to do well, then let's leverage these tools for that reason and that reason alone. So for us, it very much became about automation. It became about workflows. It became about organization, you know, as where you can imagine how robust some of these projects are when we're looking through a company who's launched, you know, 50 different campaigns and has gone through multiple different iterations of its brand story. And we're trying to figure out what was lost and what's the most important thing that we highlight in the future. So it really became a tool for us that we're like, all right, let's use this so that we can go further, but let's not ever allow this thing to make decisions for us, because that is what we have here. We have a unique vantage point on how businesses can tell a more effective story in whatever industry that they're in. and we need to make those decisions. And so still to this day at Copycat, there isn't a single application of AI where it makes a decision for us. Even in the synthesis phase, we don't allow it to like write the language or build out any positioning that we'll then pull from, because it's really hard to unwind a decision like that that's already been made for you, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But I think I'm getting a little bit too in the weeds. The point is that we went from an agency that got completely, completely disrupted by AI to an agency that's now leveraging an orchestration layer to build potentially what's going to be our best product yet.
That's fantastic. And I want people to kind of, the founders who might be listening, to really hone in on that, right? Because traditionally, a lot of founders have relied on like talking points, maybe the product marketing people, gave them 5 bullet points. So we have to be an interview, make sure you hit these points. Or if you need somebody at a tech conference, make these 3 points. And sometimes it can be robotic, just depending on the personality of the founder. Not all founders are naturally, you know, very outgoing for all this networking with different people. Yeah. So they're trying to remember these talking points and put everything. And it's very, very nerve wracking for some of them. So that ability of the story to be consistent and naturally embedded and even more powerful when they come to you guys is they're part of that process. So the post of the marketing went to the side, ran some AI tools, came back and then showed the founders. If I'm hearing it correct, your process actually brings the founder in. Bring the entire team in.
Absolutely.
Part of the process. So they don't get this weird thing with an AI-generated marketing story and the founders out there talking about it. And somebody asks them, like, I know your product did that. Or had that benefit. Like, holy crap, I'm just reciting this. Maybe I need to get into the room and be part of that collaborative human process.
You know, that's exactly right. One of the first like results that we see in the process is alignment.
Yeah.
It's actually all these individuals that represent this brand collaborating and saying, actually, this is the story that we all represent and that this entity that exists outside of us represents. And you're exactly right. Like this idea of having to be a performer for some founders is just so unnatural. But you know what's really interesting? I could wax poetic about our ICP, how we are B2B mid-market, and then for D2C a little bit higher upstream and yada yada. William, really, our ICP is when a founder can pitch a better story than anyone on their team or than anything that's captured in their brand.
Yes.
Because we extract that vision and we extract that story and we build a framework for it that people can actually integrate or brands can actually integrate. And that's it. And so it's incredibly collaborative and it's incredibly inclusive when you bring an entire organization in to say, how can we take the positioning of the company and upscale it to where we know this founder is capable of taking the story when they are just communicating naturally about what you guys are doing.
They can actually go home, tell their family members what their product and solution does. And they found like, oh, that's what you do.
Yep.
I had no idea for the last 10 years. You did something. I never understood it.
That is. Yeah, on our team, we have we actually have this incredibly talented individual named Haley Cradgel. She's our head of narrative, primary strategist here at Copycat. She actually studied narrative studies, funny enough, at USC. So it's kind of a full circle pivot in terms of us building this. But we talk a lot about this idea of narrative control. And for us, narrative control isn't when you, William, can tell the best story about your business. It's when everyone else can do that for you.
Yes. And consistency. Powerful.
And that consistency. That is mastery, honestly, in my opinion. And very few businesses ever get there. But it's that's mastery of narrative. When every person that knows your company can communicate it in a way that makes you proud.
Yeah. And that's huge, right? Because right now, especially some of these larger companies, they struggle with. So if you ask the question, the same question, to 5 different people, you're going to get 5 different answers.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like they're winging it based off the last enablement training that somebody pushed out to the team on that video. And it's still the clues. I'm like, can somebody just go and walk up to a stranger and explain what we do naturally? And let's see this and dissect what that is. Because a lot of times you get the story that's skewed towards them Mm-hmm. But the story doesn't include the prospect who got the mm-hmm. pain or the problem. It's not in there. It's just, hey, did you know we're the biggest company that has the best technology, the fastest, blah, blah, blah. And the prospect's like, I'm not included. And I like the fact the story can make sure, if you're intentional about it, make sure the story includes them and put them at the center. Like, why am I talking to you?
Yeah.
Oh, that ache that you got. Yeah. Okay. You got a rub or a pill or a process to help me with that. This is interesting. I feel included and it's wrapped in that story. So if that person goes, the next person come in and do the exact same story and they'd be like, oh, that's interesting. And that's a pretty powerful, powerful thing to get to.
It's so powerful. And it's also so lovely talking to you with your experience mm-hmm. that you have and the fact that you are an active author, right? Despite mm-hmm. the company that you're building, because I just feel so much resonance in what you communicate. You know, so often one of the first steps of us working with a partner is really looking at the brand and saying, guys, you know what's missed in this? You're not talking to anyone. You're just talking about yourself.
Yes, all the time.
and that's okay in some instances, right? Like depending on the specific, all this stuff again is so bespoke to where what a company is trying to do, their growth strategy, what have you. But the reality is that the best brand narratives start with the customer.
Yeah.
Start by speaking into that pain and addressing them specifically, and then we back in everything about the brand later. After we're trying to, you know, once we've compelled and really validated who this individual is, then we bring in who we are and why we're uniquely capable of helping this individual and whatever it is that they're searching for, be it a product or solution. And the other thing that you said in there of like going up to a stranger and, you know, just talking about your story, one of the parts of the framework is, we actually go in and we interview stakeholders. We interview customers, both customers that have churned and customers that are happy. We interview key teammates, and then we interview the founder. And we try and see whether or not there's cohesion in the story. And most often, it's not the case. Everyone's got a different rendition of what the narrative or mission is. Or the product.
Yeah, so we're an architectural firm. No, we're a technology firm. Oh, no, we're in the retail business. Like, what do you guys do?
Yeah,
oh, man, you got one big sales client and you got added one feature to your product. It's like, I don't need nobody's extra features. You built that feature for another client. Why are you telling me about it? I can tell.
That is exactly it.
Yeah. And then you're thinking, I want to hire your solution to do a particular job. I just need this one thing done.
Mm-hmm.
And then so many sales team or marketing collateral, you're looking at it, it's like, I mean, it looks cool. I can afford it. Everybody's nice, but I just needed to do that one very specific thing, and I can't tell if it does it or not. Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? Putting your prospect through that? It happens to us all the time, right?
When a
spammer calls you like, dude, I don't have the problem or it's the wrong time. It's like, let's be more intelligent how we attract prospects and with our brand, let them know we're here. So even if you do a search with the AI engine for the top 10 best brand companies, even if copycat doesn't come up, they inside of a network that heard about Sean. How did they hear about Sean? I did work for him, did good work. Reputation follows. And people started to talk to each other, understand inside a network who's a good person to go to. And even though the search engine didn't bring back copycat, it's that power of the brand. But do the good work, let people know about it, let them communicate, and they'll happily retell your story for you because it's not talking points. It's like, dude, I had this problem, the ache. Man, Sean team worked for me this 1 week. Dude, it went away. Cool guy. Solved my problem at a price point I could afford. Yes. Oh, wow. Give me Sean's contact.
100%.
Man, that's just so powerful.
The story's right there. That's the interesting part. It's like, that's one of the greatest and most overlooked marketing / positioning hacks there is. It's like, you want to go find a better way to communicate about your product or service, go talk to the people who've purchased it. Sit down with them and ask them to communicate and articulate how they would explain your business and why they made the decision to pay you actual dollars for the thing that you are offering and the thing that you are laboring so intensely to build. I guarantee you somewhere in there, you're going to find some way that someone explains your company that has a higher distinction of clarity and has some nugget of just simple language that explains exactly what you do.
Yeah. And I'm liking them to be that. I like them because they're in business for 100 years. Or their website looks so cool. Or you know what? Do you know they have like four data centers across the globe? That's the reason that, no, they don't talk about like that. That's definitely an internal organization way.
Did you know that they're AI powered?
Yeah. And cloud-based. You know they got cloud-based. Yeah. And they're in the Gartner Magic Quadrant.
Yeah.
And they go to three conferences a year with a big booth.
Yeah,
and happy hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is so funny. You know, it's to add one little last bit on that. The reality is marketing for a long time has been obsessed with like outcome marketing, you know? Yeah. You're not selling a pillow, you're selling better sleep. And you need to focus on that better sleep. And in many ways, it's a really effective way to sell like an end state. And that's what everyone's trying to achieve is this new end state based on the thing that they're buying, right? But because we've become so hyper-focused on selling outcomes, now everything's an outcome or everything's a feature, right? And that this is a big problem, I think, in SaaS specifically. So when we work with companies, one of the things that we always try and set expectations around from the beginning is that for us, no matter what narrative you're telling from a brand perspective, there are four components, all right? There is the problem that you're solving that we try and personify and create this villain out of. There is the point of view, which is the reason why you believe that problem exists. There is the promise, which is how you're going to go about solving that problem. And then there's the ruthless why, which is why you care so much that you have built something to go and solve that problem. Now, stakes need to be threaded throughout all of this, right? You need stakes. Like, what happens if I don't get this end state? We all need to know that when it comes to a purchasing decision. And it's often another thing that's overlooked. But what we tell our partners is, of these four, based on your audience, one of these is going to be more resonant. And our job in this process is to figure out which pillar to prioritize. Maybe it's actually leading with your why instead of your how for this specific product and solution and audience type that is going to open the most doors because it's closer to a mission-driven emotional purchase. Maybe it's really leaning into the how because the how is often the closest to culture. Maybe it's really leaning into the POV because this is so founder-led that thought leadership and this personal brand that's held by the executive team or just the founder themselves is so important. That's really what we're trying to do in this, William. We're often like, we're not reinventing some story or narrative. We're working with what's already there and we're extracting the bits that they can't see. And we're saying, what do we prioritize the most in the story? Which is the same question as what does your audience care most about or what are they not hearing?
Oh, I love that.
You know? So anyways.
I love the adaptation, man. When your business model gets challenged, go to the garage, have your partner get on the keyboard. You pick up the guitar.
Grab my kombucha. Kombucha is always a part of it, you know.
There you go.
get some Taking Back Sunday on. You know, always need a good emo track when it comes to a brainstorm. Yeah. No, but you're exactly right.
Man, this has been a fantastic conversation, Sean. So I love the talking to people who are out there making a difference and they're just finding the ways to keep being resilient out there and delivering for their clients.
William, thank you so much for having me. This is one of the best conversations I've had in a long time.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Oh, man, you know, I should have brought up the kitty cat icon next to the copycat. Man. Thanks for joining another episode of the Smart IT Podcast, where we explore what's next for IT and disrupt the status quo, simplify the complex, and reduce risk together. If you like what you hear, please like, subscribe, and leave your comments. And for more Smart IT wisdom, check out my website at williamreed.info.